Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We have a brand new website, macroaggressions.io. You can go there and find information on everything that we're doing, all the books, the podcasts, the partners, and all of that good stuff. Big thanks to our sponsors that make the show happen. Thank you to the folks at Solar Power Lifestyle. They sent me a 25-watt solar panel that you can see if you're watching this, that folds out, and you can connect your cell phones to it. You can connect a bunch of devices. It's about $80. Without the discount code, why don't you do this? Go to solarpowerlifestyle.com. See if you find something you like. If you do, the promo code is macro on your way out. The link will be down in the description. You can get yourself a little foldable solar panel for your house, for your car, if you're out, someplace where you might need it. So consider that. Solarpowerlifestyle.com, promo code macro. Also, thanks to Tim James and the crew at Chemical Free Body. My God, they make supplements that actually work. Imagine that. Chemical Free Body has been part of this show since I started about 4 years ago. I take their Green 85 drink every single morning. I really honestly do. I buy it from them just like you guys do. I use the promo code macro. I buy six packs of it at a time so that I'm good for 6 months. And that's what I've been doing. So if you are so inclined, go to chemicalfreebody.com, read up. Make sure you feel comfortable with it. If you do, the discount code on your way out is macro. That will save you a little bit of money on your way out. Well, now that we got the business out of the way, it's one of my favorite people in the world to talk to. Ladies and gentlemen, he's back, the owner of ECI Development, Mike Cobb. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, man. Nice to be with you. That's really cool about that solar panel. I'm going to order one of those.
I know. It's a small business. They listen to the show. I'm all about being proactive, right? As opposed to reactive. You are too,
absolutely
in the business you're in, and you and I have talked. and so I like the idea of having a little, being appropriately paranoid, right? What could possibly go wrong? You want to have that sorted out. How are you doing after Anarchapulco? It's good to see you again.
I'm doing great. It is such an incredible conference. I hope that everybody watching or listening to this go to Anarchapulco next year. We were talking before we get on. It is my favorite conference by far because of the people who are there. It's incredible the amount of free, independent thinking, wonderful, lovely, creative, adventurous people, right? I mean, it is phenomenal. So if you haven't been and you're listening to this, put it on your schedule for next year. My goodness. Yeah.
I've been 4 times. You've been 8 times. You guys at ECI Development have been sponsors of it for 8 of the 10 years. That's correct. Pretty much, that's really kind of, as far as I'm concerned, that's
what we, you know,
been there from the beginning.
We believe in what Jeff's doing. Right. And being able to pull together so many different people, ideas, concepts, everything all the way on the one end, sort of the, you know, anarcho-capitalist crypto side of things, all the way over to the incredible spirituality you get with people like Becca and others. Right. And everything in between. It's so diverse, but there's this powerful unifying, I don't know, feeling or I don't know. Help me, Charlie. There's this vibe. Yeah. Wow.
You know that the thing about the anarchist community is that they're not the type to sit around waiting for the government to solve their problems. So they have to be proactive and they get things done. And I always, you know, you drift around at that conference, you're on your way somewhere else, mm-hmm. and you run, and as you're on your way somewhere else, you run into 3 different people that you stop and have a conversation with them. You go, well, where was I going in the first place? Right. I needed to go to the bathroom 45 minutes ago. I never even got there because I wound up in all these conversations. And I always leave feeling kind of mixed about sad because I have to leave this place, but also extremely inspired because I meet the most interesting people in the world. And if you're feeling kind of alone, you're feeling like maybe, I don't know, you feel like your family left you, your friends think you're crazy, nobody's talking to you, you're in some small town, everyone's wearing a mask or whatever, you can feel kind of isolated. It's nice to go to that place and feel like you're around like-minded people that you don't have to explain, like, you don't have to start from the beginning with them. They know. Oh. They know it why you're there.
Right. And you know what? It's a community. I use that word very purposefully, right? Community. Because community, it's one of those weird words, right? Like if we ask 100 people to define community, I think we'd all write something different or say something different. But there's that concept that we're all trying to describe, right? And so the community that comes to Anarchapulco, but also the larger anarchist community, right? It's a virtual online community, right? We talk to each other once in a while, and we see each other at conferences. Maybe we're messaging or whatever, right? But there's really very few places where this physical community can exist where you can go and just drop into it and be a part of it long term, right? I think that's why you and I cherish Anarchapulco so much, as do the whatever 300-400 people that show up every year, right? Because it's this incredible ideal location to get together and be ourselves amongst others who won't judge us if we don't agree, right? And there's no agreement across the board, right? But nobody's making judgments about you if you think a little differently, and to have that for the moment, whatever, a week of time in Anarchapulco is precious. But to be able to find that as a place to live and be long term, that's I think what a, you know, and that's what we do. We help folks with that reality, right? How do I find a place where I can be myself and be around other people in a community that's like minded? I hate that word, by the way. I don't like minded because
I know. Well, but I get what you're saying. This is a group of people that they don't think like the rest of society. That's for sure. And but even within that alternative way of thinking, there's plenty of different ways to come at this. And you and I met back in 2019 because I have an appreciation for international real estate myself, and can you share? Well, the island in Belize.
Yes, you know, it's an incredible story, Charlie.
I bought in 2007, and it's now been sold, and that deal has been finalized, and everything is good. So somebody has a fantastic 3-acre island off 7 miles off the coast of Placencia in Belize that they can turn into a perfect little place. You know, it was a trip, Mike, was one day I was on Zero Hedge and they used an image for one of their stories of an island, and it was my island.
Oh, wow. See, that's very cool. Right. But Charlie, you did it, man. Back in 2007, right? You said, hey, like, I'm going to buy an island off the coast of Belize, right? And you went ahead and you did it. You talked about plan B, right? I don't know if that was part of your thinking. It was a plan B, it was investment, some of both, but you took action. You actually implemented part of a plan B, which, like those solar panels, what a great plan B. $80, man. Put that away. If you ever need it, you got it, right?
It's the Terrence McKenna quote. If you don't have a plan, you become part of somebody else's plan. And we definitely know that the somebody else may have a plan for us. So yeah, when I bought that island back in 2007, I will say this. It came earlier in the year, about three months earlier, I had read John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle of this Vegas real estate boom. And I was like, I need to start thinking about things differently. I need to start diversifying. I need to maybe get something out of this country in case things get weird. I understood that there were some problems going on. Belize is fantastic. Can we talk a little bit about Belize? Because this is
absolutely,
that was where you started, right?
Yeah, 32 years ago, bought a condo there. Yep, on Ambergris Key. Back then, tallest building on the island of Ambergris Key, San Pedro is the little town. Tallest building was two stories. Sand streets. Every street on that island was sand. The runway was paved. That was, you know, it had That's been paved nice, at though. That point. Yeah. Although I've landed on a lot of dirt runways in my life.
I've landed in grass runways and
grass. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. but
to see the country over, you know, 32 years really transform from, you know, this true niche market. Very few people had heard of Belize. In fact, I didn't even know where Belize was, right? I mean, I remember this was going back, this was 92. I was in the computer business outside of Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia. And I'm sitting in my office. My buddy from college calls me and says, hey, Mike, this is pre-9/11. So like, you know, whatever. He says, hey, Mike, I'm going to Belize this week. A doctor was supposed to go with me. Can't go. Do you want to use this ticket? I'll meet you in Houston. Get swapped. I said, sure. This was like a Tuesday. And I'm sitting there. There's no Google back then. I'm sitting there. I'm thinking. We're talking. Finally, I have to fess up. I'm like, hey, dude, where's Belize? I didn't know. I'm like, I'm going. I don't know where it is. I'm going. Right. And that was, mid 92, went down again with them. We looked at some condos and I can't remember if it was 92 or early 93, sometime in that, winter season. We bought a condo. We bought two condos, actually. And it was what got me going there very frequently. But what was interesting was, Charlie, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I see opportunities. I see problems, right? I see a problem. And then in my head, I go, how can I solve this problem to help folks, right? And what we saw back in 93 was this incredible lack of liquidity for foreign buyers, right? So, so when we went down there, the developer, by the way, you could still buy oceanfront condos for under $100,000. It was $100, right? I mean, yeah, $100,000 oceanfront condo. And the guy gave us a 20% discount if we wired the money, pay in full up front, $80,000. We said, great, we'll take two of them. So we did. But we were rare because he had sold 44 condos in the first phase and he had 11 buildings, four in each building. And the problem is that most of his buyers from the US and Canada came down expecting to be able to finance it, right? Oh, I want to put 20% down, pick a number, 30%, whatever it is, I'll finance the rest. The problem is no bank in Canada or the United States will put a loan on a piece of collateral in Belize, and no bank in Belize would lend foreigners money. And so this poor developer and many others up and down the island like him and all throughout the region were stuck financing their buyers. And it was killing their business. They couldn't develop, And so we actually started a little mortgage company in 1993. And we grew that, and turned it into a bank in 2003. And so we just celebrated 20 years as a bank in Belize. We're still really a mortgage company. We still do that's our core business, writing mortgages for North Americans who want to own property all over Latin America. But that was it, right? And watching Belize go from this tiny little niche market where nobody, if you were a serious fly fisherman or a serious diver, you knew where Belize was. But other than that, like, you probably didn't. Whatever 30, 40 years later, I don't know, 35 years later, however many years that is, 93, 03, 13th. Yeah, 30 years later. I'm trying to do the math in my head, 31 yeah, years. Yeah, anyway, count on my fingers. I got some fingers. Yeah. Yeah, 31 years later, it's really transformed into something, you know, very, very different. You got there in 2007. You were really early in Belize. You got there before it became really popular or had any real notoriety. What got you thinking? I mean, you're talking to Perkins. I mean, you're reading his book. I read the book too. Incredible.
Scuba diving. Yeah. I read Perkins' book in Thailand on a dive trip.
Okay.
Well, and so I'm reading that, and that's opening my eyes. And I'm enjoying scuba diving in unusual locations around the world, you know, when I can. And Belize, of course, pops up, as you mentioned, because it's one of the best scuba diving places in the world. You can go swim with whale sharks. They've got they've got it's geographically speaking, for those that aren't really familiar, it's on sort of it's on Mexico's Caribbean side. You know, if you think of where Cancun is, you just keep going down south a little bit further, you'll reach this place called Belize, which used to be called British Honduras. And it's a small, like, population wise. I remember I was living in Henderson, Nevada, which is right outside a suburb of Las Vegas. And Henderson, Nevada had a population of 300,000, and Belize, the entire country, had a population of 300,000. So I'm thinking, like, there's just as many people in this city that I live in as there are in this entire country. It's completely undeveloped. It's like almost, you know, there's the mountainous parts, which is beautiful rainforests, and then there's the beaches, and there's John McAfee. He made it famous for a while, you know, by disappearing to Belize and getting himself into adventures and Orange Walk and places like that, and San Pedro. And getting chased out of there. So Belize kind of gets on your radar, I don't know, in a variety of different ways. But when I saw you guys at the Narcopulco I attended, International Real Estate Belize, hey, I got to talk to these guys. And then I found out, well, it wasn't just Belize. I mean, you might have started there, but you guys have gone Nicaragua and Panama and Costa Rica. And I mean, so how does that happen? Where you guys get through with Belize and you start looking around? Like, I'm curious to know what you mentioned you find problems and solve them.
Right.
Were there liquidity issues in these other countries as well? Was that what brought you into them?
Well, from the mortgage company side, we started working also in Roatan fairly quickly, because a lot of the developers in Belize were also working in Roatan. So there was a pretty easy, you know, crisscross there. So we started financing in Roatan. But no, actually what happened, Charlie, is, you know, my business partner's a lawyer. He's a deal guy, money guy, titles, contracts. You know, he's that guy, right? I'm the boots on the ground guy. And so, you know, he'd be working on deals and looking at titles and blah, 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 blah. I would be the person who would go and actually walk through the house or walk through the condominium or go stomp around a piece of dirt and say, yep, it's here. And, you know, it meets, you know, whatever it is, what they say it is, kind of thing. Right.
Yeah.
And what we saw, which is incredible, was that, you know, look, back then I mentioned you can buy an oceanfront property for, you know, 100 grand, right? 100 to 200,000, say. If you back then, you know, 30 years ago, if you were spending, I don't know, 400 or 500 and up, you actually got a product that met your expectations as a North American consumer. But if you were spending 100, and this was even true in our condo, 100, 150, 200,000, there were just things that weren't right. Like, I remember every door handle in our condo, right? So I don't know, there might've been 6-8 doors, and every door handle was at a different height, right? Which is insane, right? Like, but you know, I mean, like, you can imagine a tall guy and a short guy all installing door handles, and they just take their arm and put it at a 90-degree angle. That's where the handle goes, right? You know, 90 degrees, right? Yeah. And so, like, the countertops were either too high or too low. A lot of times too low, and the bar stools, you'd bang your knees. You couldn't get your legs under the counter to eat at your kitchen counter, right? One outlet in the living room, right? And you have to run extension cords and outlet strips to, like, get power to the other three sides of your living room and bedrooms. I mean, it was just, you know, and so when my business partner and I started to look at this stuff, we just said to ourselves, like, this is almost free to fix. I mean, power outlets cost a little bit more money, right? But putting all the door handles in the right place, all the light switches so they turn on You know, up is on and down is off, right? Not mishmash of every other thing, right? Or a light in the bathroom, right? I mean, the light in the bathroom was back here, so your face is shattered, right? I mean, it doesn't cost anything to put the light kind of in front over the mirror, right? So we looked at this and we said, look, for $100, you know, 10 more outlets, pick a number, right? $10 an outlet, right? For $100 more, we can deliver a product that would meet a North American's expectations. And so that's really how we got into the development business, starting in 1996. We started in the development business. We purchased a small resort in 1998 in Belize, and from there we did grow it. Well, you know, we very quickly started to understand that not everybody wanted Belize, even if they were in Belize looking at real estate. I was speaking at a lot of different conferences back then. International Living is the name of the company I was speaking for. And some of the other Agora groups. So I was on the circuit. And what I would find is I'd get up and I'd talk about Belize, for example, and somebody would say, well, that's great, but do you have anything in Costa Rica? Do you have anything in, you know, Panama, Honduras, you know, wherever? And back then, Nicaragua was a up-and-coming destination. I still would say it absolutely is still an up-and-coming destination. Yeah. You know, but at the time it was, you know, really kind of way down on that popularity curve. No, you know, very few people were buying property there. And so we ended up buying a huge piece of property in Nicaragua. It was 3.5 miles of Pacific Ocean, about a mile deep, 2,500 acres. But it was a cattle pasture and it was at the end of a dirt road, 11-kilometer dirt road that you couldn't drive it in the rainy season. It was you know, like a foot of mud, right? Power, you know, the nearest three-phase power was 26 kilometers. So we ended up buying the property, putting in the road, running the electricity, and then building out that community. And then, you know, then we looked at Costa Rica. We acquired properties in Panama, and we have projects, joint venture projects in Honduras and El Salvador, really to round out this idea that there are different strokes for different folks. You know, you're a diver, right? And so Belize is perfect, or something on the Caribbean side is a really good place for diving, right? But if you're a surfer, you want to be on the Pacific Ocean with the big waves, right? And so we started to really understand that the expat marketplace generally was many different types of desires. Yeah. And so we decided as a company to really fulfill, you know, each of these geographies as best we could. And now we, you know, now we have actually 8 different geographies in, you know, 4 countries where we own the property and then 2 more where we joint venture. So, yeah.
Did you ever make it to the Worldwide Property Show by any chance? They've had those
all over. Is that London?
It's everywhere. I've been to the one in Shanghai. I've been to the one in Hong Kong. Okay. I went in 2005 and it's new develop. It's mostly new construction. I think it's all new construction. And we got a chance to, you know, you kind of man your booth but then you wander around and see what's going on. And I got a chance to meet and then later go out to dinner with the guys from Emaar and Nakheel in United Arab Emirates, the guys that were building Palm Jumeirah, yep. Palm Diara. The world, you know, remember the man-made islands and everything. Yes. Yeah. We met those guys when they were there selling it. We were selling our high-rise project in Vegas and they were selling the world and Palm Jebel Ali and Palm Jumeirah and all these man-made islands. And, we're like, what's it, you know, how are sales? They're like, they're like guys flying in on private jets, trying to buy it with gold. Pick guys coming in, just like, whatever. I'll take Australia, you know, like in the world, they would make the continents and it might be like 8 different islands that make up something that looks like Australia. And
he'll
come in and he'll just be like, which island do you want? He'll be like, I want all of Australia.
All of it.
They're like, they're like, all right. Like I'm buying drinks tonight, you know, so it was wild to see the development on this massive scale and it made me think of it because when you're talking about bringing in roads and bringing in power and all of that stuff to Nicaragua, I mean, that is one of those things that as somebody that's worked for big builders and worked for smaller developers, the developers are always, you know, they always get like, oh, you guys are trying to price gouge. You're trying to take advantage of it. You're marking this stuff up. You know, It's like, can we remind the general public how much money developers have to put in advance, blindly hoping to get that to, you know, infrastructure is not sexy, but it's necessary. You got to do it, right? You got to put the roads, the sewer, the power in and all of that stuff. I mean, how long does it take you for a project like that before you're even ready to think about building?
Great question. You know, part of, I think, there are really kind of two phases to it. Well, there's three phases, right? So you've got design, right? You hire an engineering firm, several engineering firms, whatever, but you hire engineers to design roads, water, sewer. Stormwater is a big one. It's often forgotten. In fact, in my book that you mentioned at the very beginning, you know, one of the things we talk about,
The Borders by Mike Cobb.
Yeah, but the subtext. For those of you that are thinking,
get it right the first time.
Bingo.
A Guide to Buying Your First Home Abroad, Beyond Borders by Michael Cobb. By the way, if you are thinking of buying international real estate, do yourself a favor and get this book in advance. In paperback, take it with you. Have it with you. And you're going to... This is going to be probably the best investment that you make in terms of saving you money that you can measure, saving you frustration. Ooh, that's tougher to put a price on. But boy, I'll tell you, I've made some mistakes buying international real estate before, and you have to know what you're doing. So anyway, I got a little off topic, but no, I want to make sure that we talk about the book because, like you said, it's...
Thank you, Charlie. And by the way, I will let you know as soon as it's at Amazon for order. So we're about probably 45 days away from today's date anyway. But as soon as we have it, and we'll make something special for your readers, right? I mean, I really want to get this into as many hands as possible because, you know, it is a document that will save somebody thousands, tens of thousands of dollars, maybe more actually. And you talked about you making mistakes. Hell, Charlie, I've been doing this for, you know, for 31 years and I've made a ton of mistakes. And those mistakes have been what we've put into this book, right? Is like, we, you know, when we watched other people, like I'll watch other people make mistakes and take their mistakes too. But I would say that probably over half of the content of that book is based on things that we didn't get right the first time. And, you know, and really as a mission in life, I have several missions in life, right? And I think that's probably true of all of us. But one of my missions in life is to help people who want to own a property overseas get it right the first time. And look, you know, there are millions of people buying property overseas every year, and I'm getting 0.0001% of that. I don't know, I'm up number. I don't know. I'm getting this tiny little fraction here. Right?
You're getting the right people, though. Because I've met some of your owners are listeners to the show, and I get emails from them saying, you know, giving me feedback on their experiences, you need to get to Nicaragua.
Absolutely, and it's true. Get Nicaragua, right? And that is it, right? We kind of each have niches, and our niche really has become, you know, building communities for anarchists, libertarians. It doesn't have to be anarchists, but libertarian, independent, free-minded people, but people who respect the freedom and rights of others, right? I don't care what your political persuasion is or none, right? It's all about living together where we respect other people's rights to be themselves. And we've built communities for folks like your listeners, like folks that come to Anarchapulco and other events that are very freedom oriented. And it's wonderful. But by the way, that's a real mission too. And then sort of to evolve into the next piece, and I'd like to come back to it, but let me kind of veer off for a moment. You know, this low EMF, so many people are concerned about what EMF, electromagnetic frequencies are doing to our bodies. And 5G, I say thank goodness, because I think some people might go, what are you talking about? But thank goodness, because 5G brought an awareness to so many more people, right? When it was just, you know, whatever, normal LTE and 3G, and like people are like, whatever. And a few people were raising alarms, right? 5G is much worse for us, of course. And that's a bad thing. But what it did was it brought the consciousness to the forefront. And now so many more people are saying, whoa, time out. What are we doing here? And that And so we're building a neighborhood, a village inside Grand Pacifica specifically that is already low EMF naturally. The environment itself is very, very low EMF. In fact, we hired a building biologist, Kathy Cook. She came to Grand Pacifica about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, and produced a report. And we have that report. Any of your folks that want to see the report, it's technical. It talks about readings in the microwatts in different places. It is phenomenal. And if you're concerned about that and you're thinking, hey, I might want to find my place to live where I can become healthy again and stay healthy because it's a low EMF environment, her report is a great thing to begin with, right?
Let's talk about this, because this is an EMF-free community called Isla.
Isla, right? Yep.
In Nicaragua. In the Grand Pacifica master plan, in that 2,500 acre spot, there is a section of that is geographically more desirable for you to put this community there as opposed to other places within your community or maybe other places outside.
Right.
Where between the natural topography and what you plan to do with it, this is going to be an EMF free community.
Can't say free, right?
EMF
super low. I think they measure stuff in microwatts. Anything under 10 microwatts for radio frequency, because there's different kinds of EMFs. There's dirty electricity and other things too, right? But in that radio frequency range, anything under 10 microwatts is considered incredibly low. And we're getting readings on most of this piece of property, which is about 26, 27 acres, right? It's in a little bit of a basin, a little bit of a bowl, which gives it real natural protection. We're getting readings in the anywhere from 0.5 to 5 or 6 microwatts per square meter. So almost everything's under 10. We have one place that was a little over 10, and it was like 12 or 13. But the rest of it is all under 10. So naturally, you're getting this incredibly low EMF area because of the geography, which is wonderful. And you're 600 yards from the beach. It's not like you're out in the middle of, Green Bank, West Virginia, or somewhere up in northern, Manitoba somewhere, right? I mean, no, you're 600 yards from the beach in a wonderful community of folks that are already there who have this general philosophical vibe that we've been describing. So like it's really cool that these two things intersect, right?
For sure. It's great fortune for you guys that you have a place that's already geographically predisposed to being low on the EMF scale, but then you guys are going to do additional things to the homes that you build there to ensure that. What is that exactly?
Well, right. And so full transparency, I know, and I always like to put this right up front. Grand Pacifica has a cell tower on property. It's about 1.6. It's a little over a mile away. I can't remember the exact 6,000 some yards away. Right. But cell towers are somewhat directional. Right. And so the directionality of this cell tower points at a 90 degree angle from this particular piece of property. This piece of property, again, is already, I mean, the readings are the readings. I understand some people are upset if they see a cell tower. I get it, right? But the facts are that the meter readings, the actual levels of EMF in this area are below 10 microwatts per square meter, right? Mm-hmm. So there is that. But I always like to say it up front because some people might say, well, I can't be anywhere near a cell tower. Okay, then this isn't for you, right? But if the data carries the day, right, what are the readings? Then this particular area is great. And then, right, so a couple things that we're doing on this site, right? So we have a teak forest on one side, which it sits in between Isla and the rest of the community. So that's an additional barrier, right? A natural barrier, a beautiful teak forest. And then the homes themselves, Kathy Cook is the building biologist. She worked with our architect on site, Grant Montgomery, and Grant worked with Kathy to make sure that the home designs really give the optimization for the lowest EMF possible. The typical building construction methodology in Nicaragua is concrete, rebar and concrete, which has great attenuation properties. The roof itself will be a metal roof. Grant and Kathy are talking about some screening that we can actually integrate into the outside of the walls that you would then plaster over. And locating appliances on an outside wall behind another wall away from bedrooms. So any additional dirty electricity or any other, the EMFs that come out, no smart appliances, right? So we're not going to have smart appliances. By the way, back in 2004, Charlie, in fact, I want to give a lot of credit to a woman named Karen Rich. Over a year ago now, Karen Rich reached out to us and said, "Hey, I understand that you have fiber optic at your community. I'm an EMF aware person. I would like to find out if we can do something for this community that I'm a part of, the EMF aware folks, and folks that are being sickened, visibly sickened, or they're paying attention to it. EMF sensitive apparently is not the right way to say it, because it's sort of like saying arsenic sensitive, right? I thought that was right. I mean, we're all arsenic sensitive, whether we know it or not, right? But people who are being sickened, who are aware of what's happening. And Karen's a big, big member in this community. And she brought to us and said, "Look, we have a whole bunch of people that maybe we can serve, because you put fiber in back in 2004, which we did. We were the first fiber to the home network in Central America. I had no clue what EMF was at that moment. I did it because I wanted the best bandwidth for our homeowners. I wanted infinite bandwidth, right? Fiber. And so we put it in. The benefit today is that it's a wired system. And so, the homes themselves will have fiber, will do Ethernet drops in the rooms, and then the other side of it. So you've got the home itself, which will take these already extremely low levels and minimize them even more, right? And then with the design of the homes, those kinds of things with Grant and Kathy, like you can really create a very healthy space. And let me also mention the types of construction. In the U.S., we're used to carpets and particle board, composite furniture and composite cabinetry, right? These things off-gas all kinds of horrible, crazy, horrible chemicals, right? Formaldehyde is one of them, and right. And so in a country like Nicaragua, everything is hardwood, right? I mean, you use real natural hardwoods for your cabinetry, for your furniture, tiles for the floor. The cement does not contain fly ash. I mean, Kathy asked me that. She's like, "Well, fly ash is really an allergen product. And do they use it in Nicaragua?" No, they don't. There's no fly ash in the cement, right? And so you've got these incredible natural materials that are used in construction generally. So you don't have to educate the construction workforce, because this is how they build it anyway, right?
Right.
And so you've got this home that's going to have very low off-gassing of maybe a couch, right? You got some fabrics or whatever. But even there, we can use natural materials and natural fillers, because we can have this stuff custom made for a fraction of what a couch would cost in the U.S. at your furniture store, right? So it really makes it very, very, very affordable to do these kinds of things that would be outrageously expensive in the U.S. And then on top of that, Charlie, the covenants and restrictions of this neighborhood, there will be no cell phone use permitted outdoors. There'll be no Wi-Fi. We'll drop Ethernet at the pool and the clubhouse and in a couple of the parks, right? We'll put these, we'll put these places where people can plug in hardwire to, do what they want to do. And so we're going to create this safe, healing space, because a lot of people really are sick and they need to heal first and then have that as a place. But the rules and covenants and restrictions, I know people don't like that word in the anarchist community, but because if you if you decide you want to own a home in this community, you want to be sure that 3 years from now, 5 years from now, the rules don't change and all of a sudden everyone's putting routers on the outside of their houses. I mean, no. So rules are important. Restrictions are important. It's a contractual thing. If you don't like that, don't buy there, right? But if you want that, you want that now, and you want that 10 years from now, 20 years, 30 years from now. So having those kinds of CC&Rs in place ensures that that community stays what you wanted it to be and what you bought into, in perpetuity. So, it all
government
hangs together.
That too, right? In the sense that their eminent domain laws don't apply the way they do in the US, right? They can't just make a decision unilaterally and say, well, that's great that you have this EMF thing going on here, but we've decided that instead we're going to drop a cell tower right next to it, right? They can't do that.
They cannot. Correct. They cannot, which is nice. Yeah. Yeah, man. So we're excited about it. And Karen was just really way at the front edge of this a year and a half ago, kind of saying, hey, can we do this? And we've worked with her, and she introduced us to other people like Kathy Cook, the building biologist, and we had some of our own people. So it's come together, Charlie. It's
shout out to Karen, who listens to the show as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's emailed me. We've chatted for a while, and that's one of the nice things about this is that on top of, you know, I mean, EMF, however you want to define it. Obviously, we're not going to say EMF free because that'll get us in trouble. But EMF reduced, that is a concept that I could in you know, I'm not surprised you guys sort of are at the forefront of this. You're the first developers to take crypto.
That is true.
why would you guys be
Charlie?
I'm really not surprised at all. I mean, I'm glad you're doing it. I think that for people that struggle with this, I mean, and everyone is more sensitive, and you're different. Everyone's a little different on the sensitivity scale, but there are some people that you meet and they say, I have to live away from this stuff. Or I've met a couple Canadians that came out to an Acapulco, and they said, I'm used to being out in the woods way away from anything. And now I'm here in this city. It happened to be Acapulco. It could have been anywhere really, but I'm in the city and I'm getting bombarded with cell towers and this and that. And I'm starting to feel it. There were a lot of people that I met at an Acapulco that said that, not a lot, but a couple from Canada that said, they felt like they were getting a cold, and they knew it wasn't from, like, they thought, well, it's probably from like the dirty electricity and the cell towers and whatever that was going on there. It might've been, I don't know.
Right. Right. No. And look, some people feel it a lot sooner and a lot more acutely than others. Right. So, I mean, it's like a pain tolerance, right? I mean, some people feel a little bit of pain. Some people can just push through a lot of stuff. Right. And so that sensitivity to experiencing it, is really interesting. And you're right. I had some folks at Anarchapoco saying the exact same thing, you know, being in this city environment, might've been the same couple, by the way. But being in this environment was starting to make them feel sick. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is a great it's just a great idea. When we were talking about this at the event, I was like, you got to come on and we got to talk about this with the audience, because I think that there's a lot of people that are going to want something like this and maybe not know that it's available. Not even really know that, hell, they might not even know that Nicaragua is an option. If you're coming out of America, it's like, wait, isn't this Contras?
Dangerous. You know, yeah, right.
Aren't there death squads there or whatever? And you're like, no, you raised your family there, right?
I did. Yes, I did. 14 years, moved there with my wife and 2-year-old daughter, Amanda. We had another little daughter came along a couple of years later, Emily, and we lived in Nicaragua for 14 years. Before we got on live, I was, you know, mentioning that, you know, I traveled at the time, you know, pre-COVID, right? You know, I was traveling two, 3 weeks a month, but about 40, 45 conferences a year. And I would leave my family in Nicaragua and go, you know, out for a week and come back and out and back and whatever. And, you know, in 14 years, never once a problem. You know, people, crime is local, right? Crime is very, very local, right? And you can just take any city. You could say, you know, pick a city, I don't know, Chicago, right? And you just say, oh man, Chicago's dangerous. Well, some parts are and some parts aren't, right? And I think that's true of any place, whether it's a country or a city, right? There are parts of Nicaragua that are dangerous, but most of it's not, right? Same thing with, you know, any other place. And so, you know, we had an incredible life there for 14 years. And what we found, Charlie, this is hard to fathom, right? I understand, because it's paradoxical. The idea that you can have a higher quality of life and it costs less, right? Yeah. I think that for so many people, like if we want to eat organic in the US and in Canada, right? we have to pay more for that. We have to go to a farmer's market and pay more, or we have to go to whole, I call it whole paycheck, right? Whatever. Yeah. But you know, we have to get down to Whole Foods and pay a lot more, right? If we just go to the Food Lion or Giant Eagle, right, we can buy the crap mass produced and sprayed, and you know, it's not organic and it's full of hormones, and you know, the eggs and cheese and meats, whatever, right? And that's our cheap way to eat, right? Yeah. But if we want to eat healthy, right, we want to feed our bodies healthfully, it costs a lot more. In a country like Nicaragua, chemicals are expensive. People are inexpensive, right? And so things like, you know, the organic stuff is very, very inexpensive. And so, right, so we had this incredible lift in our quality of life. At the same time, we had a cost reduction, and that's just hard for people to really, really fathom. Yeah.
That shouldn't happen. That you're right. We've been taught that that's paradoxical. I mean, that you have to pay more for organic food because it's better for you. And right. But it does make sense. If the chemicals cost money, then and the labor is cheap enough that you just, then the labor becomes the chemicals, right? You know, we spray this because we want to get rid of the bugs. Well, you know what? Instead, maybe you guys over there, you're in charge of getting rid of the bugs without the chemicals, because we can pay you next to nothing. Let me ask you this. Is there ever going to be a farming component to one of your communities? Because it seems like there could be opportunities for people that want to have a house or a condo or a tiny home or someplace like this, but then also have access to food. Are we going to have an opportunity for a community garden type thing?
Yes, it's a great question. In fact, you introduced me to a gentleman who's a former Cirque du Soleil performer at Anarchapulco, Matthew Roy. And we went down the path with him. I think it didn't quite click yet. We've kind of paused it. We'll see where it goes in the future. But yes, our intention is to further develop our agricultural component. I mean, we have, well, I don't know how many hives we have. We have way more honey than we can consume on property right now. We have, you know, several thousand fruit trees, everything from mangoes to sour oranges, limes, noni, which is an incredible antioxidant. We have plantains. We run cattle on the property. Sorghum and corn is grown. So there's already a fairly robust agricultural element on property. And then we have an area that we've made for community gardens. It really hasn't, like, it I don't know, just hasn't really caught on with the folks who live there yet. A couple individuals are doing it, which is great. But I would hope that many more would choose to do it. But I went down to Florida in the fall, and met with Jim Gale with the Food Forest.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The Food Forest Abundance folks. And part of the Isla community, the main park, the groomed park, there's lots of open space, right? That's just natural. It's going to be left natural, right? But there's a groomed park that'll be, you know, cultivated. It will be a food forest. Jim and his group, we're going to get them down. And then because a lot of the home sites, we have tiny homes, right, that are very affordable, right? We've made the smallest dwelling that we can possibly make that makes it affordable for folks that, you know, that can't afford big homes, right? And because we want as many people to be able to afford to live in the Isla community as want to and need to, right? But the single family home sites, all of those home sites are large enough that you could actually have your own food forest as well. So we're going to be integrating that component into the Isla community. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Jim Gale's amazing. We've had him on a bunch. And I want to run. Guy gets you enthusiastic about growing food in a way that I didn't know was really possible, but he's so pumped up about it. And that's a guy that comes out of the mortgage industry as well.
Yeah.
You know, who was doing that for a while, a long, long time. And he understood the value of helping people. And so I think he feels that he helps people with teaching them how to grow food. You help people by helping them get one foot out of wherever they're currently living and get into a place, a country, a community that's maybe a more ideologically aligned with their beliefs. I bet the community parties at La Isla will be pretty interesting with the people that wind up buying there. When is this going to, I know you guys are early on with this, but how early are we talking right now?
Sure. So we're in the process of educating. Thank you, Charlie, for having me on. Nick, the EMF guy, just published something in his newsletter that went out to about 100,000 folks. Nick Pinot, exactly. So Jeff and the folks at Dollar Vigilante have been talking about it. So we're really, since the beginning of the year, just really ramping up the educational component, finding folks who want more information, engaging. We've had webinars, we've had conversations with Cobb where we've brought people like Karen on and Grant, the architect, building biologist, right? So we're really trying to find out, you know, who wants to look at this as a possibility, and then begin to, you know, further design the property itself has been designed and engineered. We know what that is, right? You have to do that first. Like you talked about spending money up front, right? Because you can't even bring something like casually to the market until you understand what's possible, right? So we did that. We did all the initial engineering and feasibility studies. So that's been done. And now we're, I say, just sort of collecting interest, right? We're collecting folks that are interested in learning more and doing things like webinars. We have site visits. We have one coming up next week, middle of March. We're going to have one in the middle of April, one in the beginning of May, where folks can come down. You can come down anytime, but it is fun to come with other people. Like you said, the parties are great. So we make it fun, and, you know, different groups of people come down, and there's no program, so to speak. I mean, you come, you can see the Isla site, you can hang out with Grant and Sasha and some of the other folks that already own properties there, and get a feel for what the country's like, first of all, and it will dispel being there. I always tell people the best investment they can make if they're a real estate investor and they're looking internationally is a $2,000 plane ticket and 5 nights hotel in Nicaragua. That's the absolute best investment any real estate investor can make, because what you imagine Nicaragua to be for 99.999% of the people out there is absolutely not right. And so this idea of being able to get there, see it with your own eyes. Hey, look, a lot of people get there and go, well, this isn't for me. But it's not because there's, you know, gangs running around killing people. I mean, that's not why it's not right for you. It's just not right for you because you're a Caribbean person or, you know, whatever, right? You're a mountain person. Who knows? So getting there and seeing it. So we're definitely getting people down. And our goal would be to actually begin real work after the rainy season this year, which would be November of 24. And then the first homes would be coming online somewhere around late 25, early 26. So that's the timeline for folks. And the other thing is, a lot of the homes that are already at Grand Pacifica, because they're built out of concrete, and then Grant and Sasha have ordered some materials, some screening materials for windows and things like that, where you get leakage. A lot of the homes have pretty low EMF. So if somebody said, well, I got to get out of my super high EMF, you know, location now and move to a very low EMF location while my home's being built, there are lots of homes already in existence at Grand Pacific that people can rent for a year or 2 years in the short term. So, yeah.
Yeah. Grab a couple of your friends and that you know, that you guys are all sitting around talking about how crazy things are getting. Where are we going to go when the shit hits the fan? Well, maybe it's Nicaragua, and maybe this is you grab a couple of your buddies and you come down and you take a look and you stay for a few days and you see what's going on, and maybe you get serious about this. If you're somebody that's sensitive to EMFs and you want to be in Isla and you want to do this, okay, well, you know, this is when it's starting. This is when it's going to be approximately when it's going to be done. You might want to start that process now to get and do all that stuff. But we've talked about this before, and this is kind of the part of the Escape America plan that most people forget. And that is, it's great if you need to escape America and you go someplace and you want to hide out and you're getting away from all the civil unrest and insanity that's transpiring back in your home country, probably America. So great, you can leave, and great, you can go somewhere, but can you stay there? That's right. The real problem. And that's one of the things that you guys have been extremely valuable with doing, besides the real estate part, which in and of itself is plenty. But can we talk about the process of residency and things like that, and getting to countries and having a you know, the theme of this show, if I had to boil it down, is let's be proactive as opposed to reactive.
Yep.
Being proactive in figuring out residency programs is pretty much the ultimate in being proactive. You are actively plotting to leave where you are at some point and go some to another country and probably stay there, right? So if you've got to that level of thinking, you're a serious dude about this. And when they find you, one of the things you can do is you can sell them real estate, which is cool, but they can buy real estate anywhere. But you can also hook them up with the residency. Let's talk about that. Let's wrap up with that, because that is a huge benefit.
Charlie, thank you. And I think it's a good place to wrap up, right? Look, there's a fallacy, U.S., Canada. I think the stuff that happened with the Canadian truckers, I mean, that's indicative of what's, you know, it's serious there too. We had a lot of folks from Australia, New Zealand, England, other places when the lockdowns happened, because Nicaragua never locked down. They never had a mask mandate. And so it's crazy that you know, people, you know, would look at a place like Nicaragua and say, gosh, it's a much freer place. But we as a family enjoyed that. We enjoyed not living in the nanny state, raising our children outside the nanny state. So yeah, that's a reality. And so this notion that, oh yeah, if shit hits a fan, I'm going to leave. I think that's a pretty common thought for many people in our community, right?
Yeah.
The problem is that it's easy to leave, get on an airplane, drive to the border, walk across, whatever. I mean, you leave, right? The problem is how do you stay? I think you said that very, very well, Charlie. How do you stay, right? Because after 30 days or 60 days, 90 days, whatever it is, your tourist visa, which you enter a country on as a tourist, right, expires. And you are now, if you stay after that, an illegal, you know, alien, an illegal immigrant in that country. And so if you, and look, there are lots of workarounds. There's the informal program. Hey, I'm going to go to the border every night. I'm going to run to Costa Rica every 90 days or Panama, whatever. I'm going to, you know, come back in and out, right? That's a nice informal program. And they generally work until they don't, right? When the borders shut down, like you couldn't go across the border to get your passport stamped again, right? For another 90-day tourist visa. And so what you ended up really, you became an illegal immigrant, and you were protected by the benevolence of a bureaucrat in the immigration department. The bureaucrat had every right to come lock you up, put you in jail, and until the next plane was flying 3 months or 6 months later, stick you on it and send you back to the U.S. or Canada. They had the right to do that, right? Now, and they didn't, because they were benevolent. But I don't know about you, Charlie. I'm not putting my hands, you know, my future in the hands of a benevolent bureaucrat, right? No way. So there are better ways to do it. Legal residencies. And that's right. So when somebody wants to look at owning a piece of property, by the way, I look at the residency and the ownership of a property as a lifestyle decision on one hand, but also as a plan B. And a plan B is just simply this idea of being proactive that you talked about, right? Let's be proactive. Let's have a plan B in place. And if I never, ever need it, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? It's like life insurance or health insurance, right? I mean, I pay for my health insurance every month, but you know what? I don't want to get my money's worth, right? I hope I'm wasting my money every month on health insurance, right? And so a plan B can be as simple as, right? I just want to have this in my back pocket in case I need it. But when you pair up ownership of a property with a residency, that works very, very well for retirement. It doesn't work so well for investment, but a lot of folks are looking at the teak investment in Nicaragua. We have a big, huge teak plantation there, and you can actually get an investor's residency in Nicaragua through teak ownership. It's about $35,000. And now you have a plan B. Now you have a place that you can go to. Even if you don't own a house, it doesn't matter. You can go rent a house, right? You can rent a property for the next 5 years, 10 years, forever, however long that is. But you have the legal right, because you have a residency in that country, to stay there. And then you also have a wonderful teak investment, which is a different thing. Let's not go there today. But like, there are ways to get a residency without a property. But if you do get a property, you want to also figure out how to get that residency paired up with it.
And that's part of what you guys do, right? You put them on the path towards figuring that out. They don't have to come down there with a lawyer or anything like that. You say, this is how we do it. this is the process. Talk to our guy here. He's going to set you up and yep. that.
Yep. Pretty straightforward. Yep.
And in which countries is this available in?
We offer investor residencies with the TEEK program in Nicaragua and Panama. And then we offer a residency program in Belize. It's a lot more expensive. Belize is $250,000 to get the investor residency. Mm-hmm. Panama is about $22,000. Nicaragua is about $35,000. Panama was very, very draconian in their lockdowns, mask mandates. They went really over the top, full on, which I don't like. Right. I don't like it. Nicaragua didn't. And so if somebody were to say, what's the best, legal residency right now in the region, I would say Nicaragua at $35,000. And then you get a residency card. And if you own a property, great. But if you don't, you got that in your back pocket and it's there. And
that's buying an investment in TEEK. That's not hanging off some government guy $35,000 and never seeing that money again, right? That is you investing, deciding that you want to invest in this TEEK, this portion of the TEEK forest. And like you said, we'll get into that later or another time.
Round number, it's about $30,000 in TEEK and about $5,000 in legal and government fees, right? Gotcha. But that $30,000 TEEK investment will turn into over $400,000 in 25 years. It's a very long cycle cash flow. It's every 25 years, right? You own the land, you own the trees, but your $30,000 investment will turn into about $400,000. So like that's real money,
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you have the residency that whole time.
And someone can pay for this in crypto.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. We do a ton of business in crypto. Crazy. I don't understand why other developers won't do crypto, but that's good. I'm glad. Fine. We do.
You guys do. I think part of this is, the people that are paying in crypto, the people that are coming down because they're sensitive to EMFs, the people that are coming down because they want a plan B, escape hatch from a tyrannical government. These are the type of neighbors you'll have at a community that's built by ECI Development. So, of course, you don't necessarily get to pick. We both have been in real estate long enough. You don't get to pick who you sell to, right? The people come down, and if they want to buy, as long as they're decent people, you'll probably sell it to them. But if you've heard of ECI Development, there is a reason. You are more than likely of a mindset that will predispose you to probably like your neighbors. They're probably going to be like-minded people like you. They're going to be into health and wellness. They're going to be into personal responsibility and freedom and liberty and not interested in the government. And maybe they paid for it in crypto. Maybe you pay for it in crypto. But they definitely are going... I envision the barbecues are probably pretty interesting conversations.
They're a lot of fun. I mean, we have game nights. We have a potluck. There's a group that does potluck. They do jam sessions at the restaurant and bar. It's an infinity pool right there by the ocean. People swimming in the pool and everybody's jamming and dancing. And there's already this incredibly vibrant community there. And by the way, we don't necessarily get to pick who we sell to, although in some ways we kind of do, but we absolutely get to pick who we market to or how we market.
Yeah.
Right. And so our marketing channels have largely been to your community, Charlie, this community. And so we are building a real community of people who can hang together wonderfully and still retain all elements of their individuality. Yeah, it's really cool.
I love it. I love international real estate just in general, but to the concepts that you guys are building out, the homes that you've been building out for the past 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Put it on your radar, everybody. I'll tell you what, for those that want more information on this, go to macroaggressions.io. In the partners page there, you'll find ECI Development there. Click on that and start this process. No, you're not going to get a hard sell from anybody. Nobody does that around whether it's me or whether it's the ECI team. But if you're somebody that's in the early stages of information gathering and you want to kind of find out what your options are, my suggestion is go to my website, click on the ECI link, find out information about the communities that they're building. get yourself educated. And then if you have additional questions, there's steps that you can take there to get out and maybe come down, right? Come down and see one of these, come down for one of these events, come down for the April one in Nicaragua and say, hey, let me take a look at this. I mean, you're not going to see billboards for this. You're going to find out about this because you listen to weird stuff like this podcast, and you're going to be around, you're going to be early in on a development. And I like the idea of that. What's the best place for people to make that happen, to do something like that?
Yeah, right. Well, and you are. I mean, the folks that are listening, watching, go to Charlie's website. That's tremendous. And make the visit. And Charlie, I'm going to lean on you at some point to find out when you are coming. So
I would like to come down. I definitely would like. I mean, you don't need to twist my arm too much to get me to come down. I'm definitely into it. And also, maybe, I don't know if Amazon doesn't do pre-sales, but put this on your list. Beyond Borders, Get It Right the First Time, A Guide to Buying Your First Home Abroad by Michael Cobb. If you have this book, if you're somebody that is thinking about buying, because I've had it for a while, as you sent me one of the prototype versions.
Yeah.
Get it in paperback and take it with you. And take notes and do all of that stuff. You're going to save yourself. Chapter 8, legal buying titles. This is stuff you're going to.
Yeah. Thank you. It's good advice, by the way, to get it in paperback. I agree. I think we may be able to do a pre-sale program, which is why I said we'd do something special. So if folks are interested, you know, go to Charlie's site, let them know you're interested in getting a link to order the book as a pre-release. Yeah. By the way, I'm going to try again, we're still working everything out. I'm going to try to make it 99 cents for a pre-order. So like, I mean, just, yeah. Cause apparently with Amazon, if you hit it hard and you get a whole bunch of sales in like the first week or two, like it helps your book do better in the rankings. I don't know.
That's good. So when Berwick and I put out Controlled Demolition, we put it out on a Friday. It went to number one on Election Tuesday, 2020. Oh. And then that in Australia and the US, and then that puts it into a different category of Amazon where it starts to get suggested to people that might not normally read it. And then that kind of exponentially took it from there. So, that's Mike Cobb, everybody. He's building houses in cool places that do amazing things and that are lived in by people that are like-minded just like you. So if you're interested, go to my website, find out more about what Mike and the team is doing over at ECI Development. And if you want to connect with me directly, the website is a good place to do that. Or you can follow me on Twitter @macroaggression, where I argue with robots. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.